The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. What could we learn in today's life from a medieval philosopher? Well, you know, when it comes right down to it, wisdom doesn't have a sell-by freshness date. It's not like when you go in there and there's a bag of lettuce at Sherm's or Winco, right? I'm sorry, this wisdom is a few hundred years old. We don't want to talk about that, right? Yeah, I wanted to talk with Jeffrey Katz. Jeffrey Katz is one of the most foremost contemporary interpreters of Maimonides and his teachings. And if I can have a day in which I learn something about something of which I know nothing, and I know nothing about this individual, this thinker, I wanted to bring him on for today. Maimonides and The Rules to Live By is the book that Jeffrey has, Maimonides' Guide to a Wonderful Life. Jeffrey, it's a pleasure having you on. Welcome.
Bill, it's great to be here. Thank you so much.
All right. And I think you would agree with me that wisdom has no sell-by date, right?
Wisdom. Absolutely.
All right. Tell us a little bit about Maimonides, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
You are. Maimonides is your Maimonides, could be everybody's Maimonides. So he lived about 800 years ago. In his time, he was the top doctor. He was basically the personal doctor to the king of Egypt, who was the sultan in Cairo at the time. And he was also the top spiritualist and rabbi philosopher of his age. I mean, his works are varied, and they're still studied by many, many people today. He wrote on such diverse topics in Jewish schools around the world. People still pore over his writing constantly in every major university in the world. His philosophy is still dealt with. I mean, just as an example, you know, there are three baseball stadiums in New York, Yankee Stadium, Citi Field. The third baseball stadium is Maimonides Park.
Really?
Which is, believe it or not, in Coney Island. It's not named directly after Maimonides the man. It's named after Maimonides Hospital in New York that is named after Maimonides. So Maimonides is so kind of ingrained into the culture. You know, he's the only post-biblical figure who is celebrated by all three major religions. This is holiday season. You know, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam all celebrate him. And when all three of those religions agree on something, you know, you probably got something pretty pretty special.
How interesting. How interesting, because, you know, what we're experiencing right now, Jeffrey, and I think you'd be the first to would hope you would agree with me. I feel like right now our world's culture doesn't seem to have any guiding principle whatsoever. It almost seems to be that, just do what you feel. It's almost like, and I know this sounds maybe a little hyperbole, but it's almost more of a satanic way of looking at things. I can be whatever I want. All I have to do is say it, and I am. You know, that kind of thing. Would you agree with that first off, before we move along?
No, totally. And that's why I think the book is so relevant in his wisdom. You know, the main issues that people are dealing with now, they were the same main issues that people dealt with a few hundred years ago or whenever. And, you know, his wisdom, the qualities of character that Maimonides teaches in The Rules to Live By, which I've summarized here, are so basic and they're so fundamental to human happiness. You know, throwing overboard, you know, everything that was traditional has not resulted in an increase in happiness in our society.
Oh, so, no.
You know,
far from it.
So that's really the thing. So sometimes going back, people have become almost like ships that have lost their compass. There's no more anchor. People are just kind of, wandering haphazardly through life now. And often, if people were so happy now, it would be one thing. But this has led to unhappiness, a lot of unhappiness, you know, through all kinds of signs, drug use, suicide, and just people, you know, who are just reacting all day to things that happen to them and are not really involved in positive things in their life. So the basic, qualities of character that Maimonides teaches, it's like a parent teaching children right from wrong. It's just the basic kind of rules of life, which if you do them, they just have wonderful results in building character and in your career and your family life and your connection with God and your health. You know, Maimonides was spectacular because he was not only the top doctor of his age, top man of science, but he was also the top spiritualist thinker, man of faith, person of religion. So he really had his feet in both worlds and was a superstar in both worlds. And he wanted to share his big ideas in life because he said, you know, if I die without leaving these things for future generations, I'm denying them their rightful inheritance, their inheritance of wisdom and being able to be happy and lead balanced, fulfilling lives. So that's why he wrote what he did. And that's why I was so happy to be able to, in my book, Rules to Live By, Maimonides' Guide to a Wonderful Life, I've put Maimonides' most practical teachings in each of the seven main areas of life that he deals with, which is character, your career, health, your family life, your spiritual life and connection to God, your legacy, your attitude and happiness. And, you know, in the seven sections, each chapter, and there are about 20 chapters in each section, each chapter is only up 2 or 3 pages long. It just focuses on one main idea. You know, so it's the kind of thing like vignette where you could read 2 or 3 chapters a day and slowly integrate these principles for happiness and fulfillment into one's life, like I did. And it was really life-changing for me.
Now, from what I understand, looking a little bit of your history, you've been a lifelong student and teacher of rationalist religious philosophy. And so would you consider Maimonides then a rationalist? In other words, I guess is another way of saying that a practical philosopher of sorts?
Yes. He loved reason. And he celebrated reason, and he liked to take reason to its limits and as far as it could go in one's spirituality and connection to God. Because, for example, he teaches that the connection to God is through the mind. You build up a tunnel up to God by thinking about God correctly, and it's a two-way tunnel. It's through that same tunnel that you build up to God, as Maimonides teaches us how to do, that God then looks down upon you and watches over you, and divine providence occurs through that channel, because God may implant an idea in your mind that'll help you resolve a tough situation. You know, in a sense, the challenge is that we have to become like radios, because there's this divine overflow that Maimonides describes, this overflowing abundance of ideas and wisdom and guidance and love emanating from God at all times. The trick is, how do we receive that?
Yeah, how do we cut through the static? I mean, to use a radio term, you know, it comes right down to it, right?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. The trick is to get rid of the static so you clear the reception. The static, Bill, is the negativity and the envy and the grudges and the gossip, all that stuff that is negative and sucks out your emotional energy. You can't see the signposts on the road that God lays out, and you can't receive the divine overflow to the extent that your emotional and mental life is just being sucked out by all the negativity. But when you remove all of that, you then become a much better receiver and kind of like a radio for that divine overflow. And at that point, you will find, I mean, I can testify for this firsthand, you will see signposts on the road for your life that will be so clear to you once you've removed all of that static and all that negativity.
Let me ask you, Jeffrey, about, you know, we talked about the static and the negativity. Mm-hmm. Is maybe one of the challenges that we're facing, if Maimonides were with us today, would he look at the nonstop news cycle and the nonstop churning of emotions over the news cycles and things like that, and where there almost never seems to be time to just have quiet contemplation or to be able to listen to the still small voice within? You think it'd have a lot to say about the way many of us run our lives these days?
That idea is very fundamental to Maimonides, because Maimonides urges us to focus on things that don't change. Focus our minds and our mental power on things that are constant, like traits of character and ways to relate to other people, things that are universals and don't change every 5 minutes like the news cycle. Of course, there's room to be a well-informed person, but that should actually, according to Maimonides, not be the main driver of somebody's life. Because he because if someone wants to get involved in great projects, things that are meaningful to him, family, develop great family relationships, a productive career, and link with God and everything else, he's going to have to be focused on the things that don't change.
Did Maimonides speak at all on, you know, when you have a situation, which I do believe the culture right now of the Western world is destructive of the spiritual, destructive of the family, destructive of the unchanging things, really? I mean, would you, am I exaggerating that, you know, at this point or not? You know, at what point do you have to maybe strap on the armor, I guess, and do battle with the attacks on those permanent things, those things that shouldn't be changing, but yet are being changed right now by forces outside?
That's a fantastically important point, and Maimonides addresses it head on. Basically, one way, in many ways, one important way is he instructs us how to teach our children, how to bring up our children, and the goal is to be able to make them strong and give them independent judgment and analytical powers so that they can withstand the bombardments from without of the type you're describing. So he says when your child becomes of rational age, again, there's the rationality before 5, 6 years old when you can reason with them, when they have a decision to make, don't make the decision for them. Don't control their lives. Because, you know, the truth is if you try to control your kid's life anyway, he's going to resent you or maybe even hate you. The way to do it, Maimonides says, is discuss with them, like, if they make one decision, let them decide, but discuss with them what the likely result of their decision will be. Then over time, your children will see that you're like right so much of the time, because obviously your experience is so much faster than your kids. Your child will see that you're very able to predict good outcomes. And of course, your child wants good outcomes for himself or herself as well. So you'll become your child's advisor, not their boss. And that's so critical. That's the thing.
Persuasion and also showing good results from wise counsel, right? And I'll even admit to having been this way. Maybe we all have at some point. Do this or else, right?
Exactly. You see, it's really developing the judgment ability of your child that's vital. Because, you know, children are like trees, you know, he teaches. You know, a tree, you can, it needs water, but if you overwater a tree, the tree will not grow strong roots or deep roots, and it'll be a weak tree. It's just like children need to be trained to develop their own judgment and analytical ability, because once they're out there in the world, when they get a little older, if they don't have that firm foundation based in their own judgment and their own understanding and analytical powers, then they're just going to be subject to all of this stuff coming in, and they're going to be they're going to be overwhelmed by it and overtaken by it. But if they have that judgment, they will hold true to the values that they have most likely, and they will likely be able to withstand that nonstop onslaught that they're going to be facing, which you so astutely point to.
All right. The book is Rules to Live By, Maimonides' Guide to a Wonderful Life. It's a best-selling book, by the way. Jeffrey Katz is the author, and he's been fascinated by Maimonides ever since you were a kid, I guess when you first discovered some of those teachings. And so has this been a big part of your life's work?
It has. It's permeated every aspect of my life. You know, when I was in college, I went home for Passover one year, and my father left a copy of a book with some of Maimonides' ideas kind of on the coffee table. And again, he didn't tell me to read it, you know, because he knew that that would not result in my reading it. Just kind of left it lying around. And once I looked at some of these ideas, I just knew that I would be hooked. And in fact, I was. And really, the rest of the story is history, as they say. And I've really not only devoted such a large part of my life to studying Maimonides, but also to implementing these ideas in my life. And I can tell you, it's really transformative in really every aspect of life.
Jeffrey, there is one aspect of this, of Maimonides' teaching, one thing that he had talked about, and I think it's a title of something that I was given in one of your articles. In finances, be strict with yourself, generous with others. And I was wondering if you could explain that a bit.
Yeah, sure. You know, you could basically, that's two teachings combined in one expression. So in finances, be strict with yourself, generous with others. So like when you had one way of understanding it is that when you had a family, Maimonides is teaching us if the money is a little tight and a little short, scrimp on yourself first. Don't, be more generous with your spouse and with your children. If you need to save money, cut back on your own things first. That's very fitting and proper for the head of a household. And then a second understanding of that Maimonides taught was that when you're involved in the business world and you are holding someone else's money or someone else's money is entrusted to you, you have to be strict with yourself. You have to account for that money to the penny. But when other people are holding your money, he says, don't be so strict. Be more lax. Don't demand on such a strict accounting. Be a little more lenient when it's the other way around. But when you're holding someone else's money, you have to hold yourself to the highest standard.
Yeah, it sounds to me like Sam Bankman-Fried could have used this advice running FTX,
huh? If he had read that book, he might not have gotten that long sentence.
Yeah. He's going to have a long time to think about this. Rules to Live By, Maimonides' Guide to a Wonderful Life. Interesting how you talked about where be strict with yourself, but generous with others. It kind of reminds me of the story where, and I would see this happen, in families in which mom has, pie to serve to people. There's six people, but there's only five slices of pie. And so mom would traditionally say, well, I don't really like pie anyway. You know, that kind of thing.
Right. Exactly right. It's exactly right. My wife always tells a story. She was very poor as a kid. And once they had guests over, and her mother instructed her to say, when I serve the fancy fish, say you're not hungry. Or say, and when her mother brought the fish in, she said, oh, what a nice piece of fish. Can I have one, So that's kind of that thing. But, Maimonides has a lot to say about philanthropy, which is a fascinating topic because, many people think that you have to get wealthy and then you become a philanthropist. But Maimonides teaches that it's really many times the opposite. It's by adopting a charitable mindset that you then give yourself the tools to become very successful and become very affluent, because once you choose like a value or a cause or an idea larger than yourself that you truly believe in and that animates your life and that you start devoting, even if you don't have any spare money, you start devoting a chunk of your time and energy to, that does so many things for you. The first thing is it develops a healthy emotional detachment from money. And being emotionally detached from money is the number one thing you need to make money, right? Because you need to spend money to make money. If you're too close to the money, like a surgeon will never operate on his own kid because he's too close to the situation.
Right.
So this kind of attitude develops an emotional detachment from money, which allows people to start making great financial decisions.
Now, when you talk about having an emotional detachment, it's not you're speaking of not being okay just wasting. That's not what you're talking about. But you're not looking at it with every you're not being miserly, I guess, in which it's emotionally you're bound to it, I guess. Is that kind of what I'm hearing?
That's the right way to think about it. It's not that like you're living a life or you're vowing a life of poverty or anything. Not at all. It's just that you're viewing the money objectively as something that it's nice to have, and the truth is everything else being equal, the more of it, the better, and it makes it easier to pay your bills and so forth, and it's a good thing, but you're not going to ascribe too much emotional power to it. You're not going to become too obsessed or you're not going to care about it that much. You're going to have the distance from it, and you're really going to train yourself, and you do this also by giving charity. You do this. Maimonides teaches us that if you want to give a $50 to some charity, don't do it all at once. Do $1 a day for 50 days. It'll train your character to be detached from money, to get used to parting with your money without feeling it. And again, that's one of the key things one needs to make money, that emotional detachment from the money. And, you know, if once you give some of your time and energy bill to some local worthwhile project, or, you know, so many other things start happening for you in your life. First of all, you become a magnet for other people, because everyone, you know, many people, and also many successful and affluent people themselves, want to become involved in worthwhile projects to help people that serve, you know, underserved communities. So the contact you can wind up developing by starting your own little local charity, just the network of contacts that you wind up developing can become just just an amazing linchpin for all kinds of commercial and financial and investment opportunities. Because look, when your best friends, when your good friends that you have values in common with and you develop bonds with, because you're helping other people in a way that makes you both feel good and is really important, those kind of friendships mean when a good investment opportunity comes up, they'll mention it to you. Or when a job opening comes up, they'll mention it to you.
Your generosity of spirit is contagious, I guess, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, it's contagious, and it also, you do it to help people. And the driver is that you want to do something worthwhile. But the way God created the world is that doing that builds you up in so many ways. Like I said, it makes you a magnet. It gives you a network of contacts, the likes of which you may have never been able to dream you would have had. Mm-hmm. It also can give you, like, if you're in charge, if you develop a little charitable project and you raise a little money and you do the project successfully, think of the skills that you develop. You book budgetary skills, operational skills, management skills. I mean, you think these are some of the skills a business might be interested in?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just like a total win-win situation. But again, he makes the point, a philanthropic mindset often is what leads to great wealth. It's not the other way around.
You're right. It's kind of reversed. I had never really considered it this way. But really, Maimonides, what you're speaking about is almost like unlocking the universal power of attraction, right? By what you're doing.
In some ways, it's like that. These principles are so powerful, and they're kind of, we were mentioning before, the news cycle, things that change every 10 minutes. These are the things that don't change because they're basic to human character. You know, teaching judgment in your children, that's something that doesn't change. That's something that was important 800 years ago. It's important now, and it'll be important 800 years from now.
Let me talk about the children, if you don't mind, Jeffrey, just for a moment.
Sure.
One of the biggest attacks on reality, because remember, you're a rationalist, you know, rationalist philosophy that you talk about. One of the biggest attacks, I think, on our children right now is the inculcation of, you know, you came into this world in the wrong gender. You know this is happening, you know, a lot. No doubt you've kept track of that.
Of course.
That kind of attack. What kind of wisdom could be brought into the discussion as a parent or a grandparent or someone in order to maybe look at this a little more rationally rather than through the feelings and feelings only? Do you know any thoughts on Maimonides' teaching? Now, of course, back then, I don't think they would have even considered the current kind of culture attack.
Of course. Yeah. Well, you know, it's an excellent question. You know, from one perspective, I mean, Maimonides counsels us to get to know God by knowing the world and appreciating nature. Now, it's funny, you know, some of the same people who are so quick to inspect people's genders to see if they're right or wrong, they're the same people who say, oh my God, you're not eating organic fruit, it's not natural, you're doing something unnatural. So there's some kind of silly inconsistency there, it seems, between insisting that like fruit be totally organic, but like we don't like your gender and you don't even know it, so we're gonna counsel you to change it. I think it's more basically a recognition of God's place in the universe, and whether God is God or whether we are God. You know, when we are God, then all kinds of silly things can and wrong-headed ideas can kind of come into the equation. Maimonides has some great expressions for this also. You know, he said, teach your tongue to say, I do not know, and you will progress. In other words, the way females and males are part of humanity and the larger animal kingdom. Can we really purport to understand that to such a degree that we feel free to just change it according to our own whims? Isn't that a little bit touching on hubris? So Maimonides, you know, he basically said try to achieve balance in life by success in all these different areas. But there are two areas in life where you should have no balance, where balance is no good. And one of those areas is humility versus excessive pride. And, you know, so he says you should have humility. In other words, he's a rationalist, and this is key. He's a rationalist, but he also is very insistent on recognizing the limits of reason. And there are some places beyond which we can't go because we just don't understand it. You know, it's a reminiscence of just atheists will say, oh, I know that God does not exist. Of course, I'm sure of it. But how could that possibly be? I mean, first of all, you just can't prove a negative. Just in the rules of logic, you can't even do it. So number one, it makes no sense from that perspective. And secondly, any physicist will tell you that modern physics doesn't understand almost anything about the universe. It's only 5% of the universe that's composed of the atoms that we know about. 95% they call dark energy or dark matter, which is just a euphemism for saying we have no clue what it is. It's not anything we know, nor can we probably ever know what it is. So, you know, in that type of environment, Bill, where we really know, we know a lot in a sense, but we know kind of enough to know that we really don't know that much about anything. So in that kind of environment, not to seek God and not to take everything that God offers us in this world and develop a link to God is really a sin in many ways, not only in a religious sense, but also a sin against human happiness, because Maimonides taught that just like a small child needs a strong relationship with parents to be happy, so too Maimonides teaches every person needs a relationship with God in order to be happy and a link with God. And, you know, you get it through that developing that relationship with God, through that mental tunnel we talked about before. And it's really an important part of a balanced life. And without it, you know, you can have a great family life, great career life, and other things can be terrific. If you don't have a meaningful link with God, you're just not going to be that happy.
Jeffrey, fascinating conversation. And I appreciate you having joined us on Good Friday to have a talk about this. And the book is a bestseller, and it's Rules to Live By, Maimonides' Guide to a Wonderful Life. And I'm hoping that you're helping a lot of people with this. Do you have a main website for the book, or just go to the usual suspects or your local bookstore? What would you do to find out more?
Yeah, mainly it's available. Thank you so much, Bill. It's available everywhere books and ebooks are sold: Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target. And if you go to Amazon and you put in the name of the book or my name, Rules to Live By, or Jeffrey Katz, all my books will come up, including the latest one, Rules to Live By. And I really hope, and if you click through, you can get additional information about me. And I really hope it's a blessing for everybody. It's really transformative. And as I said, it really was a life changer for me.
All right. Final question I have for you, and this doesn't really have to do with the book, but I noticed that you're a practicing attorney. And what kind of law do you practice, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, no, of course. I have a general finance practice, very, very broad finance practice, all areas of lending and borrowing and collateral and all kinds of stuff like that.
And as a point of law here, is there any attempt to push back on the wokeism that has gone through all the institutions, but including the legal profession? I don't know, have you looked at that and kind of going like, hey, this doesn't make sense at all? You know, where the culture is trying to push this.
These are important issues, because if you think about it, educational institutions are supposed to be about the free inquiry and the search for truth, like Maimonides. I mean, Maimonides' best expression was, you know, respect the truth from whatever source it comes. We're not going to censor anybody, and we're not going to say that we don't like your views on this subject, so we're going to cancel you, or we're going to do something else to you. So it's a very serious issue in terms of, freedom of speech, equality under the law. We have to deal with this as a society, because You know, we're on this kind of precipice where a lot of people feel we're headed in the wrong direction on these issues. And we really need to come to grips with it as a society, not only in terms of the freedom of speech and freedom of expression and equality under the law, but also, you know, in terms of just kind of our overall privacy, you know, the surveillance, because the surveillance and the technology era that we're entering, where everything can be checked, everything is seen and heard through all kinds of monitors. You know, we still don't understand as a society how to implement all of these things, and we're kind of trying to figure it out, but it's, you know, it's probably not being handled, you know, perfectly.
Oh, yeah. Well, what I've been concerned about is how there seems to be a growing push to be where, you know, if you have, it used to be where attorneys would defend someone just because they thought everyone deserves defense. And now it's kind of, now we seem to be going into, well, if you don't agree with my politics or my view on the world, I can't defend you, or I'm not going to, you know, to work with you. And that seems to be a really key, that was such an underpinning of Western jurisprudence, which is on the precipice of being completely destroyed. And I that would strike me as something that a good attorney would be concerned about.
Oh, absolutely. Now, I think not only a good attorney, I think every American and really everyone in the free world has to be very concerned, because we have a system where, you know, the judges don't, but the judges basically, you know, monitor, you know, what's going on in their courtroom, but they rely on the advocates for each side to make the arguments for each side. And they rely on that, which is why it's so basic to our system that every side gets represented in a, you know, in an efficient and competent way. Once you have, you know, an attitude that says, oh, this person, you know, he's basically guilty. He's just guilty. Let's not even bother.
Yeah, he's, you know, guilty just because not even worthy of defending, right? That's
right. Well, yeah, guilty, not even worthy of defending, but the papers say he stands for this, and, well, we don't like that, so why even be fair to this guy? He doesn't even deserve due process. And that's really what it boils down to at the end of the day, due process. I think every attorney and every American hopes that our basic institutions like due process and basic freedom of speech and equality under the law will be able to work themselves out in due course. Yeah, you know, these are a lot of changes that our society is going through because, among other reasons, because of all the technological advances. You know, even 50 years ago, and that's pretty recent, even 50 years ago, we were not technologically able to do all of what we can do now. So I'm cautiously optimistic that as we move forward as a society, we can work all these issues out in a way that's fair and that most Americans and other people in the free world feel good about. And I think, you know, the book, These Rules to Live By, I think they really do, Maimonides' principles really do give us an anchor in these times. Because again, Bill, these principles don't change over time. These principles and these basic human needs are the same throughout decades and throughout centuries and throughout millennia. It's just the details that change, not the basic rules.
Jeffrey, a pleasure talking with you. I went way over time with you, and I thank you for indulging me, okay?
It was my pleasure.
All right. Wonderful. Rules to Live By, Maimonides' Guide to a Wonderful Life, Jeffrey Katz. And we'll put all your information up on my show blog. Be well. Thank you very much for having joined us. Take care.
Thank you. God bless. All the best. Have a great holiday if you're celebrating.
You bet. It is 847 at KMED, KCMD.
It's home show season. The next one for Johnson Builders will be Southern Oregon Home Show at the Jackson County Expo in early May. But you don't have to wait to get low home show pricing right now for any building you need. From a small shop to a huge riding area, residential or commercial, Johnson Builders is the leading authority on post and frame construction in the region. So get a quote on your project and take advantage of special home show pricing. Visit Johnson.Builders.
Johnson Builders. Building for your future.
In 2005, John and Dan acquired Drake's Paint, your local Benjamin Moore dealer, from their fathers. More important than the assets was the cherished family business name. The cousins still work hard every day to honor the name passed down from over a century, symbolizing the values and tradition the Drakes built before them. At Drake's Paint, you get top quality Benjamin Moore paint and stain and a legacy of service and value preserved for generations. Drake's Paint, your only locally owned paint store in Medford and Grants Pass.
So, I've been thinking about how nimble and responsive Fontana Roofing is.
And?
Humor me. Close your eyes.
Okay.
Picture, if you will, an unassuming but charming home pending for sale. Suddenly, the tenuous boundary between buyer and seller is a paper-thin, worn membrane of composite material. Beyond lies a harmonious transaction in ruin. Ladies and gentlemen, you make a tenuous phone call and enter the wondrous dimension of customer satisfaction. Next stop, the re-roof zone.
The re-roof zone? Why don't we just say that Fontana Roofing, thanks to their long employee retention, have experienced teams of expert, efficient roofers that are often able to react to our customers' unique situations and turn their jobs around fast without sacrificing quality.
Okay, but I kind of wanted to work in how we have the ability to bend the fabric of space and time.
Let's just let our customers assume that.
Fair enough.
If time is of the essence, visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is your one-stop accessory and protection shop, offering quality products like Lydex spray-on bedliners, undercoating, and truck, Jeep, and SUV accessories. Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is now your premier source for overlanding, off-road, and outdoor lifestyle products. So what are you waiting for? Stop on by and get prepared for your next adventure. They're located at 4840 Airway Drive, just off Vilas Road in Central Point. Oregon Truck and Auto Authority. Your department of adventure.
News sponsored by Valley View Nursery, your only nursery with online pricing. Visit valleyviewnursery.com. They're closer than you think.
Good morning. I'm Natalie Cerna with your NBC5 Morning News Update. Verizon held a public meeting last night to discuss the proposed installation of a wireless communication facility at Southern Oregon University. The proposed installation includes six antennae, which would be behind a rooftop screened wall on top of SOU's science building. One Ashland resident, Derek Franklin, says he was disappointed at the presentation Verizon had to offer during the meeting, saying two standees isn't enough. During a recent Ashland City Council meeting, many residents also expressed their concerns of potential impacts of 5G technology. We asked if one of the Verizon representatives at the public meetings could speak with NBC5. A representative said all communication would have to go through their public information official. Then a $500,000 fuel reduction project is set to begin next week on the Bear Creek Greenway. Starting Monday, contractors will work on the greenway between Ashland and Talent to reduce the dry, woody materials on the ground left over from the Alameda fire. The work will cause the greenway path to be closed in certain areas over the next few months. Jackson County Parks Director Steve Lambert says this project highlights the best ways different groups can come together to keep communities safe from wildfire risk. You can keep up to date with the closures on the Jackson County Parks website. That's a look at your morning headlines for NBC5 News. I'm Natalie Cerna. Have a great day.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is brought to you by Johnson Builders, Southern Oregon's leading authority on post frame and steel buildings for over 20 years.
Rev up your engines, folks. American Wrencher Garage is putting on the brakes this season, ending the high cost of vehicle repairs with their exclusive offer. Discounted Oregon e-deal certificates good for a whopping $75 off any service. Whether it's a routine check, oil change, brake repair, a full-on engine overhaul. Trust the expert technicians to get the job done right. Visit OregonEDeals.com to snag your discounted certificate. Drive in. Save big. American Wrencher Garage. Across from Elmer's on Biddle.
Joel here at Butler Ford, and if you're looking for a big truck with a small payment, I got you covered. Ford Super Duties are back in stock with lease deals where you can get a Ford F-250 for only $445 a month. For $445 a month, you can now tow and haul with a brand new big shiny F-250. Nobody knows how to make lease deals work on a Ford truck like Butler Ford. That's why businesses and individuals have been coming to us for years when they want a new truck for a low lease payment, like $445 a month on a new Ford F-250. And lease payments are even lower on F-150 and Ford Escapes. Butler says yes to big discounts and rebates. Butler says yes to giving you more for your trade. Butler says yes to $4.45 a month on a Ford Super Duty. Butler Ford and Truck Center, just 12 short minutes south of Medford, right off of exit 19, where you know we've got your truck, your SUV, your certified pre-owned hybrid, and EV.
42 monthly lease payments to 7,500 miles per year with 97.48 cash or trade due at signing, excluding tax, license, title, and 250 dealer dock fee on vehicle with a cap cost of $48,125. Unapproved financing through Ford Credit. Offer expires 3/31/24.
106.3 KMED, 99.3 KCMD, and this is the Bill Myers Show.
Hey, it's great having you here. 8:53. A little bit of time for some open phones. Let me go to Jim. Jim's in Grants Pass. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind this morning? Welcome.
Good morning, Bill. I just called to say that was a terrific segment that you just, on that interview.
And, Jeffrey Katz on Maimonides. Yeah. And I'll confess, I knew nothing about Maimonides until talking with Jeffrey, and it makes me want to learn more now, which I consider a positive thing.
Me too. Yes. Need more of that stuff. I mean, that's really food for thought. I mean, there's enough food for thought to feed a town.
Yeah.
It was just amazing.
Well,
so anyway,
I'm also glad. I'm glad you enjoyed it and got something from it. And, you know, not all the people I talk to are going to have that kind of effect. But Jeffrey was kind of special. He was an interesting guy, interesting cat.
Yes,
really was.
Very, very, very articulate man. So,
but I think he also makes a point, and this is not even something from Jeffrey. I think all of us, you know, we have to be in a very noisy, tumultuous world that we have to also make sure that we have time to be quiet. You know, still the thoughts, still the cacophony. Get the cacophony out of our life, and there must be quiet in order to prosper and function properly. I thank you so much. Appreciate the call. Okay, you be well. 8:55. Let me go to next line. Hi, KMED, KCMD. Hello.
Is this me?
Oh, hey, Joel. How are you? How are things in the Iron Gate?
Well, the Grand Canyon of the Iron Gate.
Yeah, the Grand Canyon of course, all the news coming out of that is just talking about what a wonderful reseeding effort is going on. I'm sure it's all being restored right now as we speak, right?
Oh yeah, I'm gonna open a mule ride through the
through the mud. Okay. Hey, what's on your mind though? You probably called for something else.
I'm working on a ballot voting counting, and so we're going to go for paper ballots on heavy cardstock.
Uh-huh.
They'll have a pull off ID.
You want to develop a ballot then with the tear off like another person called in about? All right, yeah.
Right.
So like a receipt, a voting receipt.
Underneath that tear off piece is a thumbprint, special ink that you put your right thumb on.
Oh,
and so that gets, and then we have a backup vote check online with an 800 call-in number. So if the deep state says Trump got 47 million, but 90 million people call in saying, I want Trump, without relinquishing who they are, but verifiable on a computer that there's, you know, one call, one check.
Yeah, well, one from your lips, though, if we get to the point where we're actually counting votes out in the open without machines, without essentially... What do they call it? Proprietary software. I mean, totally transparent. Liberals talk about transparency, but they don't really want transparency in reality when it comes to it, all right? Joel, I appreciate the best. Good luck on that. Okay, good luck. Tell me how that works, okay?